Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Yeah, when I first saw that bikini top on her, she's popping right out of the South Georgia water. Thought, oh good Lord, she had them long tail legs. Couldn't help myself, so I walked up and said, well, baby, you a song.
Good evening. What's going on, everybody? Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd for show 40 of On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Boyd, what's happening?
Man, big things happening in the world of sports, but even more so, man, we have two great guests that are coming on, and I'm excited. I can't wait to get on there and talk with them. But, man, some big things always happening in the world of sports.
Seems to be the norm. Every Monday we turn around, there's new and exciting things. Hopefully, good and positive things, and sometimes that's not always the case. And you've got exciting action in Russia with the Olympics and the great story of the U.S. hockey team, and then you've got the NBA All-Star Weekend, and then, of course, on the downside, the report comes out of Miami and the Dolphins.
Yeah, you know, let's start with that, to talk about the Miami Dolphins. What a train wreck that is going on there. And, of course, we're talking about Jonathan Martin, offensive lineman for the Miami Dolphins, and Richie Incognito. This story just seems to get more interesting as the days progress. The biggest thing that has come out of Miami this week is that, you know, there have been conclusive results that have come out that say that, man, Jonathan Martin was actually right as far as being bullied. Can you imagine that, being bullied? When you think about an NFL football player, Sean Wally, you're thinking, man, there's no way in the world that this person can be bullied. But yet there's evidence that states that not only was he bullied by Richie Incognito, but by other teammates. And there wasn't just racial epithets. There was actually talks about his stepmom and other things, man. So, I mean, it's starting to unravel. And, you know, there's a little bit of justice that's going to come out of this in the end, but I just don't know what this says for the Miami Dolphins organization moving forward.
Well, you've got to think that at some point adults have to take over. Even if you're 22 and new to the NFL, 24, you maybe been around a year or two, or even an older veteran, somebody's got to step in and put an end to that and say enough is enough, regardless of, okay, maybe we were joking at first and it escalated and started the snowball. And the fact that the offensive line coach knew about it and condoned it, are you kidding me? That guy better be the first one out of the job. And for the head coach, Joe Philbin, not to know any of it, I don't know how that's possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, you take a look at the organization and not, you know, bashing the organization, because that's not what we're set out to do, especially on the show. But if teams set out year in and year out to go for the Holy Grail, which is the Super Bowl, and, you know, you're the head coach or you're the GM or the owner, the thing that you must do, if you're putting, especially if you're the owner, the thing that you must do is make sure that everybody in your organization is on the same page moving forward for that goal. And it just seems like there, you know, are different things that are going on in, you know, with the Miami Dolphins. And let's face it, we're talking about the Miami Dolphins right now, but it could very well be another team. It could very well be numerous teams. And, you know, as a fan, you wonder, how in the world is my team not getting to this particular point or this particular part of the season, meaning the postseason and second round and then, you know, and NFC or AFC championships? This is the reason, Sean Wally. And these things that may seem minor to an offensive line coach, like you were saying, are major as far as putting together a solid unit, a core group, a band of brothers, if you will, that will, you know, fight for each other. And, you know, you're thinking that, hey, you know, we have this great football team, only to find out that there are little cancer cells that are going in and are tearing your ball club apart. It can't be good in Miami right now.
What sort of changes do you see forthcoming that the league might turn to now so there's not another Jonathan Martin?
Well, you know, unfortunately in this case, you know, it is a reactive type of a thing. And so for the NFL, they have to move fast on making sure that these types of things don't happen again. If I know Roger Goodell, I'm thinking that, man, he's going to put down a strong mandate. He's going to have, you know, make sure that there are policies in place to where the NFL will not have this type of thing happen again. They can't afford to have this. This, you're talking about the NFL, the top brand, and, you know, they don't want anything to happen, you know, as far as their revenue is concerned. So I see Roger Goodell definitely, you know, making some strides as far as getting this fixed quickly.
Yeah, it's a shame that it takes issues like this, and not just minor issues. I mean, the report was hundreds of pages, and so many people were affected, you know, in different ways in the Dolphins organization, that, you know, people were talking about how the second level of the second floor of Dolphins headquarters is, you know, the business offices and the actual employees that have to go through harassment training and have a harassment hotline, and that they can call and leave anonymous messages if they feel there are threatening issues. Yet the players on the first floor don't have that same spot to go to, or don't have that same training to say, look, this is not okay.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Because, you know, it doesn't matter. We're talking about the NFL here. And, you know, if you're an everyday Joe that clocks in and puts in 40 hours a week, and you go through an orientation, you go through these types of things. You go through a sexual harassment training. You go through all of these things that, you know, will help you toe the line as far as not just being a company man, but more importantly, understanding the rules and the policies of what it is that you're embarking on. And so for the NFL, and you're talking about an NFL that has a symposium, that has former NFL players that come in, that mentor, that teach these young men the right way, teach them about their finances, teach them about, you know, their psychological, and yet these types of things are still happening. And so with that being said, I believe that the NFL is really going to dig deep. And once they put their finger in on it, you thought it was bad, you know, about, you know, 15-yard penalties for spiking the football and this, that, and the other, or unsportsmanlike. Wait till the NFL starts to dig in into the behind the scenes of organizations. It's going to be really tough on the NFL to move forward on this one.
Switching gears to something that is a little bit happier times right now. Of course, this weekend we had the NBA All-Star Game in New Orleans, and let's go right on out to the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines and welcome in big-time guest Henry Turner. Henry, welcome to the show tonight.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me.
Hey, Henry, thanks for taking the time out to be on the double with the Double S Express. Man, it's a big game yesterday in the All-Star Game. I would probably say one of the better entertaining All-Star Games that we've seen in recent years, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, you know, it really seemed like the East was very, very concentrated on winning this time. You know, I think LeBron and company got together with the rest of the East guys and said, hey, you know, we've lost the last four times in a row. It's time for the East to step their game up and show that they can win an All-Star game.
Yeah, that's right, and that's exactly what it looked like. The game was close up until – I mean, all the way down to about a minute left, and you could see how serious the East actually wanted it. They wanted a little bit more than the West, which I thought was interesting because the favorite, obviously, was the West when you had, you know, sharpshooters like Northern California great Steph Curry, which really, he had what I would say is, you know, an off game. I mean, he had 12 points. I think he was 1 of 10 from the three-point line, Henry. I mean, something crazy like that. But the West was definitely supposed to go out there and win this game.
No doubt. You know, if you looked at it on paper, of course, the West was the heavy favorite. But I tell you what, Double, it seems like all-star weekend, all the East guys, they must have got together. I'm talking about the challenge, the slam dunk competition, the three-point competition. The East was very focused on winning whenever they stepped out there on the floor. And I'm telling you, I think they had a lot to do with LeBron James saying, hey, we tired of the West coming over here and kicking our butts.
Good point.
Henry Turner joining us here on the double with the Double S Express. And Henry, you were a guy that had some big jams and liked to dunk the ball in your playing days. And what do you think the issue is with the slam dunk contest at All-Star Weekend nowadays?
Well, you know, I like the way they switched it up. with, you know, the East versus the West. I like that part of it. I think it got a little lackluster because I honestly thought that they were going to have the one-on-one dunk-off, especially after with the East eliminated the West. We understood that. But I thought we were going to get a chance to see guys do one-on-one dunk, even if you just had the three participants, John Wall, you know, and the other two participants that were in the slam dunk competition. I think they ended it a little premature just with the last dunk of John Wall.
Now, Henry, you played for two seasons with the Sacramento Kings and a number of years overseas in Europe. What were your experiences like going overseas, and how did that relate in terms of the game versus what you had in college and also in the NBA?
Wow. Well, I tell you what, the first time I stepped foot in Europe, you know, it was a major experience for me. I think that's back when, you know, guys were just starting to import over to Europe. You know, you had guys like Brian Shaw and Danny Ferry that had left the NBA and went over to Europe and played basketball. And I was treated very, very well over there. Of course, you know, it was a new thing. Seeing that NBA players coming to Europe was huge. But I tell you what I got a chance to see. What I got a chance to see is that a few years later on down the line, the NBA started indoctrinating the European player into the NBA. They start bringing over the Tony Kukoc's. They start bringing over the Dirk Nowitzki's, the Dino Rodgers, the guys like that. And I was very much used to seeing a 7-foot guy shooting jump shots, that quote-unquote stretch four, what we have in the league right now. That's the European-style ball. Mike D'Antoni brought a little of that back with him when he came over here. So as far as knowing the European game, I was kind of like a step or two ahead of a lot of guys here in the NBA that was used to having that quote-unquote double post down low. The NBA has definitely changed with this, with the inflection of the European player. You only have one post guy down there. Sometimes you don't have that. The high post guy is your inside guy, so it opens up the floor more for a quicker and higher paced game. So my game was more adept to that earlier on in my career than a lot of guys in the NBA.
Henry Turner kind of left to join us on the double with the Double S Express. And Henry, one of the things that you were mentioning was is adaptation. You had one phenomenal game. Of course, you know, this has been talked about. I'm sure, you know, every time somebody, you know, comes up to you, they say, man, tell us about, you know, the 360 dunk that you did in the game. I mean, I believe you scored 30 points in the first half. This was in Greece. And, you know, kind of give us an idea, because what it sounds like what you did is you revolutionized basketball over in Europe, as much as you learned some things as far as the European style of basketball.
Right. Well, when I was in Greece, I was quote unquote a scorer. You know, it was my duty to basically, you know, and it's funny that I bring this up. I was Michael Jordan in Europe. That's exactly who I was. You know, it was up to me to go out and score a lot of points. So that's exactly what I did. And at that point in time, me going over to Europe, I was that new insurgent player because I was 6'7", 220 pounds, and they had never seen anything like that at the 2-3 position, and I was able to jump out the gym. So, like I said, it was kind of like I was the Michael Jordan of Europe at that time, and that revolutionized the game of Europe also.
Well, you know, that's not a bad comparison, you know, to be known as the Michael Jordan of anything. And so, you know, hats off to you on that, because that is truly spectacular.
Well, you know, any American, I'm not saying that my game was like Michael's, no way, no how, you know, because for me, Michael is the epitome of a basketball player. But it was just the fact of an NBA player coming over to Europe and having that flash, that cut,
right,
the ability to play above the rim, alley-oop dunks and things like that. So, of course, when they see that, the first thing come to mind is Michael Jordan.
So, of course, Henry, you retired from basketball in 2002, and, you know, I get a chance to watch you and listen to you on 1140 KHDK in Sacramento, but then get a chance to see you on TV. You work with some great people, some great co-hosts on Comcast with Jim Cosimore and Katie Christensen and Fat Lever. Give us a little bit of an idea, because as an athlete, it's not easy to make a transition from being a player to then going to be a basketball analyst.
You know, no doubt. I tell you what, to make that change, it totally just brings your game full circle, because I want to say there's pretty much four different ways how you watch a basketball game. You can watch the basketball game as a fan, and they usually watch the ball. You can watch the basketball game as a player. You're usually watching your man. You can look at it from a coach's aspect. The coaches are watching the team. But you have to look at it from an analytical standpoint, an analyst standpoint. You have to watch the whole game. My eye now, I see everything that goes on out there on the floor. I'm not looking at one specific point. You have to see the whole total game and to be able to, you know, bring that game to life, especially when you're on the radio, to bring that game to life and be able to describe it to where someone who's listening to the game feels like they're right there.
Henry, what have you learned since you jumped into the analyst duties and calling action? And what have you learned that you can share that maybe you didn't know about the broadcasting realm when you were a player?
Well, you know what? I've learned that it's a lot of people who's in the media who really don't know the game. You know, I've understood that, you know, for me being a player and then transitioning into the media side, I will never walk in a locker room after game six and a guy that lost and say, "How do you feel about losing game six? You just scored 50 points." You know, I already know how he feels. You know,
right.
So I would never go in there and ask a question like that. But, you know, we still have reporters that will go in there and ask, you know, basketball players really silly questions to where, and then they want to get, you know, really just be astonished about, oh, well, you know, he gave me a crazy answer. Well, you asked a crazy question. A crazy question gets a crazy answer. You can go and ask Greg Popovich a crazy question, and what you going to get?
Henry, you've spent most of your adult life playing basketball, now as an analyst. What are some of your favorite moments looking back on your career thus far?
Wow, you know, as a basketball player, of course, I would have to say probably like my rookie year, because I grew up, I was born and raised in Oakland, California, and I was always a Golden State Warrior fan. And I played on the Golden State Warrior floor as a hotshot peewee. I was going to the Oakland Boys Club. We had a chance to play on the Golden State Warrior floor. And then later on in life, in high school, we had our high school championships right there on the Golden State Warrior floor. So later on, I played in the NIT. We played Cal while I was in college right there on the Golden State floor. So when I finally walked into that arena and I had an NBA jersey on my back and I'm about to play the Golden State Warriors, it kind of brought a tear to my eye, because I felt like my basketball career has finally came full circle, because this is where I've always wanted to be as a kid.
Henry Turner, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. And you're talking about your NBA career and the Golden State Warriors, of course. Man, you know, I'm sure you still root the Warriors on a little bit, even though you work with the Sacramento Kings, but we won't even get into that. We'll talk a little bit about the
DC. Deep down, I'm still a Warrior fan.
All right. So now working with the Sacramento Kings, 18-35, the Kings are on the season. I mean, we have a new ownership, Vivek Ranadive coming in and, you know, just taking the city by storm. And, of course, with Kevin Johnson in the offseason, you know, working miracles as far as keeping the Sacramento Kings in town. How many years do you think, Henry, it's going to take here before, you know, Sacramento starts to, you know, cash in on these dividends as far as, you know, having a good, solid franchise on the floor?
Well, you know, I'm going to piggyback off what the owners and the coaches say. You know, they gave this thing a 3-year run. They say by the time the Kings move into their new arena, they want to be playoff ready. And the thing is that what people don't understand is that this is the team that was inherited by Vivek Ranadive, Mike Malone, Pete D'Alessandro, and the rest of the organization. You know, they inherited this team. They didn't build this team. We still have guys on this team that played on this team last year. So it's going to be a process. And, you know, anybody who knows anything about NBA basketball, you just can't trade and cut a whole team in 1 year. It's a process. It's going to take time. So, You know, they have been very aggressive. They acquired Derek Williams, you know, a very nice piece as far as, you know, a guy who could score around the rim. Then they made the blockbuster trade. They got Rudy Gay, Aaron Gray, and Quincy Acey, three guys from Toronto. Rudy Gay is a very nice basketball player. He struggled in Toronto a little bit, but hey, sometimes, you know, a change of scenery, a change of philosophy will bring a guy's game back, and Rudy has been playing very well as of late. The thing now is that they're still a few pieces away from being, you know, a good team. It's going to take some time. The guys going to have to get a chance to play together. It's not like you can build a playoff or a championship franchise overnight.
Yeah, and you mentioned some great players here, Henry, as far as Rudy Gay being a great addition to the team. Of course, you have a solid piece in the point guard, Isaiah Thomas, as well. But the biggest enigma I'm thinking that strikes Sacramento is, of course, DeMarcus Cousins. Now, tell me a little bit about that, especially with Shaquille O'Neal having part ownership, and then he's saying that he wants to mentor DeMarcus, if you will. Can you see the maturation process developing, from the end of last year to where he's at today?
Well, let me tell you this about DeMarcus Cousins. DeMarcus Cousins is one of the best big men I've seen in a long time. And when you hear that from a guy that have my eyes, I'm talking NBA and European basketball. This young man he has the keys to his own success. He can drive the car. The thing about it is that how good does DeMarcus Cousins want to be? DeMarcus Cousins is a young man that can play a basketball game, don't play in the second quarter, the whole quarter because he's in foul trouble, and still is able to end the game up scoring 25 points and 15 rebounds and doesn't even play the second quarter. He's able to get those type of numbers. Now, Shaquille O'Neal sees it. Vivek Ranadive sees it. Mike Malone sees it. Everybody that walks through that door sees the potential of a DeMarcus Cousins. But like I said before, it's all about how bad does DeMarcus Cousins want to leave a great legacy in the NBA. He's already in the NBA and one of the best centers here, so he's going to have a good legacy. I tell DeMarcus all the time, I tell him, what do you want to be? Do you want to be a good player that just played in the NBA, or do you want to be a great player? The difference between good and great players and all-stars, a good player, you can find them anywhere in the NBA. What translates you to be an all-star and a great player is how better can you make someone else on your team. We already know you can average 20 and 15. That's DeMarcus Cousins. But can you help another guy better his game? And that's the path that DeMarcus is on right now, is trying to be a bigger and a better teammate, a bigger and better leader. We already know what type of player he is out there on the floor.
Henry, with the new ownership group this season, have you been able to tell a change in the culture for the positive and a better feeling around the Kings this season?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Just look at the trades they made. I mean, they have been seriously trying to renovate this basketball team. And the new ownership, they have put it out there. They say they want to win. So whatever it's going to take to make this team a productive team out there on the floor, that's what they're willing to do. And I think Vivek Ranadive and Mark Mastroff and the rest of the guys, they definitely want a winning product out there on the floor. You know, we understand that you just can't go out and open your wallet and buy every player possible because it's not going to work a la Brooklyn. It's not going to work that way. You have to have some cohesiveness.
Henry, for a young standout basketball athlete, what would you say to them things they could do to help get them to the next level, whether that be major college or possibly the pros?
Wow, you know, I go out and I talk to a lot of kids in the community. I go to a lot of schools. I go to a lot of boys' clubs. And I always tell them this, and I'm glad that we have this young man on our basketball team as a poster child. I tell them, I say, look at Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas was 60th in the NBA draft, the last pick. And this guy got to be every bit of 5'7 on a good day.
Yes.
And that goes to show that you don't have to be a giant to to play in the NBA, as long as you got the heart of a Giant, it can be done. And that young man has proven that to be true, because he is leading an NBA franchise, quote-unquote 5'7", and number 60th in the NBA draft. Nobody thought this kid would ever be on the team, nevertheless running it the way he is.
And, Henry, you mentioned, you know, something that is a huge and that is a fantastic point. Of course, Isaiah Thomas, you know, I believe, to be honest with you, I believe he's 5'6". For Sean Wally and myself, we had the chance to follow him all through his younger days up in Tacoma, Washington, actually university place. He went to Curtis High School in Tacoma, 5'6". He packed gymnasiums and people came from all around. I think as a local favorite in the Pacific Northwest, we all knew that he was going to be great, but to actually see him doing what he's doing right now, as far as, you know, taking on a team that, you know, still has some egos and some things to put together, he's doing an excellent job as far as running the point, and not just as an athlete, but with his mental, as far as helping these guys develop as players.
Well, let me tell you this, you know, I am on the Isaiah Thomas bandwagon. I really like this young man. I think he's doing everything the right way. And as far as what you're saying, you know, a big man in a small package, I played with one of the best small point guards who ever played the game. Spud Webb was my point guard when I was here in Sacramento. And he reminds me a lot of Spud, because he has that leadership quality. He's fearless. He's going to go out there. He's going to fight. He's going to give you 150% every time he steps on the floor. And what I really like about Isaiah is that his work ethic is there. Isaiah is the first person on the floor at 4 o'clock for a 7:30 game, getting his workout in when nobody else is in the building, just him, a basketball, and a coach. And he's working out, getting himself prepared for a basketball game. So you really have to like what the young Husky is doing.
Well, Henry, thank you for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate it. Man, we can talk with you all day long about NBA basketball, especially the Sacramento Kings. Henry, thanks for coming on. If you want to follow Henry Turner, you can follow him on Twitter at Hank the High Flyer. Again, that's at Hank the High Flyer. And Henry, if you don't mind, let everybody know, for those in Northern California, you have a post-game show, an after-the-game show on 1140 KHDK. You, Jim Cosimore, and Katie Christensen, along with Fat Lever. What time does that show come on Pacific Standard Time?
Pacific Standard Time, it usually comes on 30 minutes before the game, and then we come on right after the game, and we do an hour post-game after the game, depending upon if we go in overtime or not. So you know what? And I'd like to thank you guys for having me on, and I'll tell you what, if any time you guys want to talk basketball, not just Sacramento Kings basketball, but if you want to talk NBA basketball, give me a call, give me a shout, holler at your boy. I'm willing to do it.
Oh, well, that sounds great, Henry. Hey, man, thanks for being on, and we're definitely going to look you up on that. And again, thanks for being on the show.
Appreciate your time, Henry.
Hey, you know what? Hit me up anytime, man.
All right.
That's Henry Turner, analyst for the Sacramento Kings on radio, TV, all over the place in Northern California.
Yeah, man. You know, I do. I really feel like we can talk with Henry all day long. And of course, you know, he has a plethora of knowledge. We didn't really get a chance to talk that much about, you know, his career in Europe. We had a couple of questions, but man, we'll have him on the show again. And again, this was a good start to the show, Sean Wally. So coming back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit more sports, and then we'll have guest number two on. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
This is Michael David from Seattle. I've lost 35 pounds of fat, and my waist went from size 38 to size 32. I have more energy, and I look and feel 20 years younger.
Andro 400 is the natural, safe, and effective way to lose weight, gain energy, increase testosterone, and feel young again. Too good to be true? Then listen to what Bob and Jim have to say.
And in 30 days, I lost approximately 10 pounds. After another 30 days, I lost another 8 pounds, so a total of 18 pounds lost in 60 days. My libido has been increased 100-fold, and I feel like a teenager again.
I've been taking Nandro 400 for about a year now. I've lost a little over 30 pounds. I have more energy. Biggest thing is just feeling better about myself, a lot more confident.
Guys, it's time to discover what Andro 400 can do for you. Call 888-400-0435. That's 888-400-0435 or go to andro400.com.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. And the world's gonna know your name.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And let's waste no time. Go right back out to the holysmokednuts.com phone lines and welcome in Ryan Macagnana of NFL Media. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And Ryan, so, you know, you started out, I mean, you're a jack of traits, if you will, and you're doing some things with the NFL right now. Give the listeners a little bit on what you're doing with the NFL.
Oh yeah, well, it's a couple of things. I mean, I'm a digital content producer for them right now, which involves editing the articles that come in to the website. I mean, if you've read something on NFL.com in the news section, there's like a 95% chance that I've gone through it and edited it. But I also get to write for them as well, so. I mean, today I actually just wrote an article about that Richie Incognito Jonathan Martin situation. I mean, and obviously that's been the talk of the football world for the past couple months.
Yeah, so give us an idea then. You're doing research on that, and Sean and I were talking about this at the beginning of the show. You know, it seems to be unraveling by the day, and I believe we're at the tip of the iceberg right now. The worst is yet to come. What have you found out as of recent as far as, you know, different changes of events?
Well, you're talking about the Incognito Martin story.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, well, right now, a couple days ago, Ted Wells, who's the independent investigator who NFL hired to, come up with a report on and investigate what had happened, within that Dolphins organization. After he released a report, you know, we have Incognito giving his side of the story. He went on a Twitter rant the other day, and then he deleted his Twitter, only to come back today, and I guess he revived that account. And then on the other side, you have Player A, who was later identified as Andrew McDonald. He was, I guess, on the receiving end of that disparaging treatment. Apparently, the offensive line coach, Jim Turner, got him a male blow-up doll, among other things. The agent for McDonald, yeah. But the agent for, you know, what's interesting is that the agent for McDonald, despite all that treatment, is saying that his client harbors no, you know, hard feelings toward the Dolphins at all, and that he doesn't classify it as bullying. And neither does Brian McKinney. Yeah, and neither does Brian McKinney, who's the offensive tackle. When the offensive tackles for the Dolphins, and he didn't classify it as bullying either. In fact, he went up on Sirius XM radio today and actually felt that Martin should have kept it in house, and that not only that, he's gonna have potential issues trying to get back in the league because he's trying to return. I know that Martin's agent is actually trying to meet with all 32 teams at the combine, according to our insider Ian Rappaport. at NFL Media. So, and a lot of interesting developments in the story. It's not going anywhere. It's not going away anytime soon. That's for sure.
So what do you think, Ryan? Is this something that is going to be a black eye on the NFL, or is this just something that is being magnified for now, and then, you know, it'll be brushed under the rug moving forward?
Well, it's going to be hard to brush something like this under the rug. I mean, especially because when it first came out, if you remember, I mean, it wasn't just on ESPN. I mean, it was a crossover type thing where it was going on CNN, and they were talking about it on all kinds of mainstream, you know, news media. So, you know, with that, the NFL has been taking it very seriously. There's been reports that on our site that Roger Goodell has, you know, the commissioner, that he's been speaking to players, trying to get feedback on what can be done to kind of affect change within the locker room, within the locker room culture of the NFL. And on top of that, you know, our insider Ian Rappaport reported that there will be some big cultural changes coming to the league, whether it's in the form of a new protocol as far as like a league-wide, I don't know, handbook or you know, who knows. But I definitely think that you'll be seeing some changes to the policy as far as specifying what is classified as acceptable and not acceptable in league locker rooms.
Ryan, do you think that this issue down with the Dolphins is a microcosm of the entire NFL and it's just magnified, or do you think this is a pretty isolated, extreme incident?
Well, you know, I think you've seen players come out from other teams and talk about how, you know, the NFL locker room is different from your standard, you know, workplace. You know, there's a lot of testosterone flying around, you know, a lot of things that there's ribbing, you know, there's hazing. It's just a question of what is acceptable and what is not, what is appropriate, what is not, what is professional and what is not. And I you know, as far as it being a microcosm, obviously I couldn't tell you because I don't, you know, I'm not a player in the NFL. I couldn't tell you as far as what goes on a daily basis, you know, within these locker rooms. I can give you an opinion on the outside looking in as a writer, as a football fan. You know, I do think, you know, obviously what happened in the Dolphins locker room, in my opinion, you know, was inappropriate and unacceptable. You'd like to think that that it is an isolated incident. You know, the realist in me says, you know, you just don't know. And I think we'll get a real feel of what the NFL locker room is like, especially with Michael Sam. I don't know if you heard that University of Missouri defensive end who came out of the closet and said he was gay, especially because, I mean, he's a bona fide draft prospect, and he's most likely heading to the league. So we're going to see exactly what the NFL locker room, you know, league-wide or whichever team that he lands, we'll see what these locker rooms are about, because they'll definitely be scrutinized and magnified in light of this Incognito Martin saga.
Yeah, Ryan, it's interesting, the whole Sam issue coming out now, that it's a similar situation, but it's a lot more real. And, you know, we're going to see how much not only the NFL, but its teams and players have learned from this issue down in Miami. And the fact that Sam is out there being a bruiser, being, you know, a very good football player, and letting people know that, you know, he's there to play football and he does what he's supposed to do on defense and setting records in the SEC. And that shouldn't come into question. Whether it does behind closed doors, you know, that will be told here down the road.
Yeah, I mean, you got to admire his bravery too, to come out before the draft. You know, I mean, it would be one thing if he waited, you know, until his draft status weren't affected. I mean, because now, I mean, he's definitely going to be asked a billion questions once he hits the combine this weekend by scouts, by, you know, GMs or whoever happens to interact with them from the 32 NFL teams. And you've got to admire him for putting it out there. You know, it's as if to say, look, I have nothing to hide. And, you know, I think that you know, he's definitely a trailblazer. You know, I'd want to see if, again, as we said earlier, how the locker room treats him, and B, you know, what this means for other players who might be in the closet if they're going to consider coming out. Because I think it was very interesting. We had, NFL Network had Sid Ziegler, who is the editor of Outsports.com, who was instrumental in helping Michael Sam come out in the way that he did. And he brought up the opinion that we might not see any players come out, any other players come out this season, just because, you know, they're looking at Michael Sam as a test case, as a case study. So, yeah, what's going to happen this season? Because obviously it's going to affect how they're going to be treated down the road as well.
Ryan Macchignana, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. You know, Ryan, there are some big things that are going on in the NFL. And, of course, you know, we've just mentioned a couple of them. So, you know, with the NFL in the offseason, I mean, they have their hands full on a lot of issues. I feel that this could be the NFL's finest hour if they get the chance to, you know, make the right choices, do the right things. For a young man like Michael Sam that you're mentioning, the the scope is going to be on him so tremendous. And it's going to be, you know, one of those things to look and see how he's going to react to this moving forward. You know, do you see, you know, Michael Sam actually just going in and taking care of business?
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, you know, the football aspect aside, we're human beings. It's going to be hard to say that he's just going to be able to just go in there and block everything out. I mean, some athletes are able to do that. Some aren't. I mean, clearly, this is an accomplished player. I mean, you can't just go to the SEC and be named Defensive Player of the Year just by
walking
on
right.
the field. I mean, I think that speaks a lot about the quality of player Sam is. I mean, I know that there are a lot of mock drafts that had him going anywhere between the third to fifth round. You know, as far as, you know, him on the field, you know, he's kind of an undersized defensive end, so a lot of scouts have him projected as an outside, you know, pass rushing linebacker from in a 3-4 type defense. You know, I think it also depends on the fit, you know, where he gets drafted, and hopefully he gets paired with a coaching staff that knows how to utilize him, and you know, that obviously that makes him feel comfortable as well off the field.
Most definitely, and you know, you know, I wish this young man the best of luck, you know, as far as going forward. And, you know, again, it, you know, just one of those daily saga types of things, if you will. But, hey, Ryan, I want to ask you, shift gears a little bit. You know, of course, you do things with the NFL. Some big things that go on. I mean, there's a huge passion of yours that we haven't talked about, and that is the world of boxing. And so tell the listeners how you got involved in boxing.
Oh, you know, I started writing for maxboxing.com back in the I think it was 2010 or late 2009, I believe. And you know, I just kept writing and going to fights. And, you know, I think it's very... David Avila, who's a very accomplished boxing writer, said it best. You know, right? You can tell a writer's worth in his address book, and I think it's very important as a young writer that you try to build contacts in both, you know, whether it's the fighters or the managers who are basically the de facto agents or the promoters, because you know you're building that network, because that's how you're gonna break stories, and that's how you're going to get the meat of your stories. It's from the fighters and the people involved in the sport themselves. I mean, it's different from just being a fan looking at it from the outside. That's one thing I learned. But yeah, I mean, I moved on from there. I had a great time writing for Max Boxing. I currently write for Boxing Scene as well as contribute to Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area, you know, as their boxing insider. So, and I even though I'm still working down here in LA with the NFL, I still have a beat on the local boxing scene in Northern California. In fact, I'm actually watching a card on Fox Sports 1 right now in Salinas while I'm talking to you guys. So No, I love Sweet Science. I miss it, and you know, anytime I get a chance to cover it, I will.
Well, Ryan, you have such a strong pedigree coming, you know, in Northern California. Of course, Ryan graduates from UC Davis School of Law, and I believe one of the deans had a great accolade for you as far as, you know, you just being very articulate. You're smart. I guess it was Ryan is a smart boxing commentator. That's what it was by the dean of law school, Kevin Johnson, and. Dean Johnson said that. And so, I mean, you know, those are strong words, especially when you're talking about he put you in lines with the Howard Cosell. I mean, that's amazing, you know. And so I definitely look forward to hearing some of your commentating here in the near future.
Oh, well, yeah, Dean Johnson is too nice. He's a huge fight fan. You know, if you ever go to any of the fights in Sacramento, you'll definitely see Dean Johnson right there ringside with his son. So, you know, that's really high praise. I don't know if I could live up to that. I mean, I was just a gold standard as far as boxing commentating goes. But, man, I mean, yeah, it's always flattering to even be mentioned. So.
Well, yeah, well, you mentioned, you know, fights in Northern California. I mean, if you're ever going to be in the area, let us know. I know that our marketing director, Lisa Flores, is a boxing connoisseur. She loves boxing. And so, you know, we'll definitely have to get together on that and, you know, make one of these boxing matches.
Well, you know, speaking of Northern California, there's a fighter who you guys might know by the name of Amir Khan. And he's a British silver medalist and former 140-pound champion. But right now, he's in talks, he and his camp are in talks to be Floyd Mayweather's next opponent on May 3. Khan, he trains in the East Bay in Hayward with Virgil Hunter, who also trains Andre Ward. And right now, it's down to, you know, Floyd, he's choosing between Amir Khan and another welterweight from Argentina named Marcos Maidana. So if Khan can make that fight happen, I mean, that, you know, just revive that Northern California boxing scene, just like when Robert Guerrero got the fight. I don't know if you know him. He's a welterweight from Gilroy.
Yeah,
Northern California boxing's no joke.
Yeah, and of course you mentioned Andre Ward. You know, of course he's Northern California favorite. You know, he hasn't boxed in a minute. So does Andre have a fight on coming up here in the next few months or so? What's on the slate for him?
Well, not right now. You know, he just fought in November. He defended his super middleweight title. He shut out Edwin Rodriguez, who was happening to train in San Carlos for a portion of the camp. You know, Andre, he's had some issues. He's trying to break free from his promoter Dan Goose and try to he actually tried to take him to court twice, or he and his manager, James Prince, but it doesn't look like that's successful. He might have to stick with Goosen for a while. With that said, you know, I wouldn't call the relationship acrimonious that they've got going on, but it's definitely, it seems adversarial if he's trying to break free from Dan. So I don't know what's next for Andre, but he should be fighting soon because this is his prime, and HBO's starting to really put their weight behind him. He's starting to make a good seven figures every fight out, and they're expecting a lot from him because everybody wants to know, with Floyd getting older, who's going to be that next American fighter to take the torch, to take that pay-per-view mantle from Floyd. And HBO is really hoping it's Andre, and obviously everybody in Northern California is hoping that it's SOG as well.
Ryan, you're almost taking my next question right from me here, and that was going to be who is going to be that next one or two that can take boxing back and take the reins. And MMA has taken a lot of fans from boxing, and there seems to be a lot more action in a smaller amount of time in MMA, and boxing did take a hit there initially. But, you know, Pacquiao's not getting any younger. Mayweather's not getting any younger. So there should hopefully be a new younger wave and a younger generation to grab that torch and run with it.
Well, you know, as a boxing fan, I like MMA. You know, it's tough whenever I hear boxing fans or MMA fans, you know, act so adversarial toward each other in terms of you can't like both sports, or, you know, you're either a boxing fan or an MMA fan. I think they're two different sports. You know, I mean, obviously the combat aspect is what binds them together. But with what you're saying as far as boxing losing ground to MMA, you know, that 18 to 49 demographic is always going to be the most important demographic, because that's what's going to be selling tickets, selling pay-per-views. And MMA has definitely made some leaps and bounds, you know, as far as gaining a fan base. And Dana White and UFC, Zuffa, they've done an excellent job as far as marketing their product. But the money is still in boxing. You know, I mean, Floyd, Manny are still pulling, you know, 25, 30, 40 million a fight. You know, there aren't any UFC fighters that are pulling that yet. So the money is still in boxing. It's just a matter of, you know, I wish that a lot of these old school promoters could take a page out of the Zuffa's book, or excuse me, out of the Fertitta's book, as far as, you know, how to market their product. As far as who's next, you know, it's tough. You know, for a while, Adrian Broner is very brash, very exciting, but, you know, also very unprofessional outside of the ring. He was supposedly tabbed as the second coming of Floyd until he got defeated by Marcos Maidana, the guy I talked about earlier, who's in the running to fight Floyd next. You know, Andre is in the mix, but, you know, you got to wonder, a lot of fans that love that blood and gut style might not be, you know, in tune with Andre, who's more of a surgeon. He's very precise. You know, he'll beat guys 12-0 by decision. And, you know, a lot of fans, you know, they want to get their money's worth. They want to see a war, you know. And I think MMA, you know, to bring back to your point, they do such a great job of giving you that in such a short amount of time. But, you know, I don't see boxing dying. It's the cockroach. You know, they like to say it's the cockroach that never dies. I mean, boxing has been torn apart, you know, for generation after generation by media and fans alike, and yet they still keep coming back. So I definitely think that MMA's done an outstanding job. I mean, I know you're out there in Sacramento. You got my guy Uriah Faber there. And, you know, there's a lot of great gyms. People are doing MMA. So, you know, that's also big for the sport. But I don't think boxing's going away. It's just, can the promoters find that heir apparent to Floyd and Manny, and B, market the product in a way that is appealing to this 18 to 49 demographic?
And Ryan, I'm assuming a guy with your boxing knowledge and acumen, you probably occasionally, when you can, tune in to Friday Night Fights on ESPN, and I had the chance to actually work one of their events about three and a half weeks ago outside of Olympia, Washington, and it was really exciting. And I hadn't been to a boxing event in many years, and it was really entertaining, and the crowd was into it, and the whole arena was jumping, and it was a really good time. So it would be good if they could find a way to grab on to somebody and have somebody take the lead again and be that next up-and-comer and take boxing back to where it was in the early to mid-90s.
Yeah, just no more mismatches. You know, I think that's the tough part, too, because everybody, if you're a promoter or manager, you're so worried that your fighter is going to lose his O if he's coming up in the game, he's undefeated, and he's 20-0, 21-0, but if he's been fighting, you know, journeyman guys who aren't, you know, that are mismatches or overmatched, the fans get tuned out for that. You know, like, they get turned off. What I love about going to a UFC card is that, you know, you get there are 11, you know, 8, 9 fights on the card, and the first fight, the fans are all there. The arena is packed, and
right,
they're all ready to go because, you know, they know you're going to be getting a blood and guts war. It's not a blood and guts war, an even match that's going to be entertaining. And, you know, the problem is with these promoters and managers and in the boxing game right now is that when you're trying to protect a fighter, you want to move up in the game because you know that HBO, Showtime, whoever it is on TV, they're not going to want a guy who's like 20 and 12, even though he makes exciting fights, which makes no sense because, you know, this is, you're here to entertain. So, you know, I think that if they can somehow, you know, these promoters and managers take risks and allow their fighters to, even though they're young prospects, to getting more 50-50 or at least, you know, 60-40 type matchups where, you know, there's at least some doubt on who's going to win the fight. Then, you know, I think you'll be able to get more exciting fights, and you'll be able to kind of spawn a new generation of boxing fans who enjoy the sport just as I did when I was a little kid.
Ryan, you had mentioned, you know, the imbalance, you know, and not having lopsided fights. Of course, there are a couple of fights that are coming up March 1st down in San Antonio with Chavez Jr. and Pacquiao in April against Tim Bradley. Both of these fights are being put on by George Foreman Jr. Or the Foreman boys, and they're both HBO. On HBO. You know, I mean, right. You know, you're looking at the Pacquiao Bradley fight. I mean, how lopsided is that going to be?
That is actually a fight where that's more of a 50-50 fight. I think that you know, on paper, you know, you look at the first fight. And I was actually on Comcast Sportsnet talking about it as soon as it happened. I mean, it was a clear robbery. You know, Pacquiao won the first 9 rounds, and Bradley, he kind of just gave the last 3 away. But, you know, everybody and their mother thought that Pacquiao won that fight, despite what the judges thought. I mean, but this time around, it's a little different, you know, because and this is why. Number one, Manny, he's a little older in the tooth now. He's a little longer in the tooth. He's older. Coming off, even though he had that dominant performance over Rios, I don't think it was vintage Manny, because there were about 4 or 5 times during that Rios fight where he could have stopped him and taken him out like the Manny Pacquiao of old would do, and he didn't. And obviously the fight before that, he was knocked out cold by Juan Manuel Marquez. You have to wonder, with Manny Pacquiao, is the desire still there? Does he feel like he still has something to prove? You know, is it a killer instinct that got him to the top of the sport? It's still there. And with Timothy Bradley, his last fight, he went out and beat Juan Manuel Marquez, the same guy who just knocked out Pacquiao. And obviously, you know, fighter A, just because fighter A beats fighter B and fighter B beats fighter C doesn't necessarily mean fighter A will beat fighter C. You know, that styles makes fights. That's one of the axioms of boxing. But, you know, with a guy like Timothy Bradley, I mean, he proved that... you know, he could bounce back from that adversity facing the Pacquiao fight and the previous fight with Ruslan Provodnikov, where he almost got knocked out, and he beat a top 5 pound for pound guy in Marquez. You wonder if Bradley's on the way up and Pacquiao's on the way down. I think that's what makes this fight intriguing, because you want to know if Manny still got it, and this, you know, you don't know if he was really as motivated as he was with the Rios fight, because he was expected to win and coast, which he did. Here, he's got something to prove, and we'll find out if he really still wants to, you know, if he still really has his eye on that perch on top of the mountain, because right now Floyd Mayweather Jr. is number one pound for pound without a doubt, and Manny, you know, he's got to work his way back up if he wants to be mentioned in that air again.
Ryan Macanana, given his great boxing knowledge and passion here on the Double with the Double S Express. Ryan, thanks so much for your time and insight tonight. Pleasure having you on, and we look forward to hopefully having you on as we get closer to the big fights in the spring.
Anytime, guys, and I appreciate you having me on, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ryan.
Man, Ryan sure has all kinds of knowledge and a great passion for... seems to be all things sports, so he fits right up our alley.
Yeah, you know, and man, just as the dean of the School of Law at UC Davis was saying, I mean, man, he was right on when, you know, Ryan started talking about the, you know, the upcoming fight on HBO in April, you know, with Manny Pacquiao. Man, he broke it down 50-50, and he did an awesome job and got me excited about thinking about watching this boxing match. We're going to take a quick break. Sorry, Sean. We're going to take this break here, and then when we come back, we're going to finish up talking a little bit more sports. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret. A new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product. Helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you burn with the brush fade.
Yeah. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd wrapping up another exciting show here on the Double, show number 40.
Man, and what a great show it is. It was, Sean Wally. Of course, we had, you know, Henry the High Flyer Turner on, and of course, talking all things NBA, getting a chance to talk a little bit about his career, some of the things that he's doing now in Sacramento, some great things as far as being a broadcast analyst for the Sacramento Kings. And then, of course, guest number two, Ryan Macchignana, talking a little bit of football, a little bit of boxing. Man, we kind of danced around and did our own little deal there in the ring, if you will, Sean Wally.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just great that, you know, between our connections and Alicia Flores' connections and help, that we just keep lining up the dominoes, lining up the guests, and bringing them in and hitting the home run show after show. And you never know what we're going to bring you next. You know, we went boxing, which we've really haven't done much of at all here on this show, and we hope to pick that up big time. We've talked some MMA and had a fighter on and talked MMA after a big UFC fight with Bob Stelton. And, you know, it's just, you never know what you're going to get here on the Double, and that's one of many reasons you need to tune in.
Yeah, so, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more boxing next week with George Foreman Jr. coming on, so definitely mark that into your calendar. George Foreman Jr. coming on the show as one of the guests. Hey, you know what, Sean? I would like to see if we can get the California kid Ryan Macchignana was talking about, Uriah Faber. That would be really, really cool to have him on and get a chance to talk a little bit more MMA and some of the things that he's doing these days in the world of MMA.
Yeah, that would be great. There's all kinds of up-and-coming athletes and guys that maybe aren't making SportsCenter, but they're doing great things too, and they can be right here on the Double and tell their story and have people hear how they have made it so far and persevered and trying to do good things and make it to the big time.
Yeah, you know, and of course, you know, for all of our fans out there listening, you know, don't fret. You know, baseball season, we know that spring training is coming up, and we'll definitely be talking about some of that in the near future. I'm really excited. Of course, you know, the Oakland A's are still trying to stay pat and making some deals here. And, of course, up in the PNW, Sean Wally, we will be talking Seattle Mariner stuff as well. Seattle's making some moves slowly but surely over the past week. And so, yeah, we'll definitely talk spring training, amongst other things, in the shows to come.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd in Elk Grove, California. I'm Sean Wally, Tri-Cities, Washington. This is On the Double with the Double S Express, show 40. We have to thank big-time guest number one, Henry Turner, analyst for the Sacramento Kings, and big-time guest number two tonight, Ryan Macchignana, a digital content producer at NFL Media, as well as a boxing writer at BoxingScene.com, and analyst for CSN Bay Area.
And, you know, Sean, we cannot forget to send shouts out, of course, to our engineer, Don Newsom. Awesome job. Always, as always, an awesome job. And, of course, Alicia Flores, our marketing director, you know, making sure that we're getting some of these interviews in. You know, we make for an awesome team, man, and looking forward to next week's show.
Where we will bring you show 41. So in the next week, find all the archives right here at bbsradio.com/DSX, as well as Stitcher Radio and on iTunes. So many avenues to find the show if you missed one or want to hear it again. And then, of course, come back every Monday night, 7 p.m. right here on The Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double, Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big time guests. On the Double, Double S Express.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up, you can beat the...